stops.
For more, we're joined by Manuel Oliver, the father of Joaquin, one of 17 people killed in the 2018 mass shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. Manny's the co-founder of the gun reform group Change the Ref. His new project is The Shot Line. He's joining us today from Lansing, Michigan, where he's set to perform his one-person show called Guac. Welcome back to Democracy Now!, Manny. Once again, as we do so many times, offering you our condolences, not only on the death of your son 6 years ago, Guac, but on the gun violence deaths of so many in this country. So they interrupted your Shot Line presentation on CNN to bring you yet another mass shooting that you had to respond to. Can you take it from there and talk about the project you were in D.C. to present?
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me here. Absolutely. That's exactly what happened. We reached a point where we're going to fight about dates. Like I thought February 14th will be the day that we honor the victims from Parkland. But I can tell you now that next year, a lot of people will be honoring what happened in Kansas City. And that's the best way for America to forget about a shooting, a mass shooting. Having a new one will make everybody ignore the other one. That's sad, but it's true. And shame on us on that. We were in D.C. launching the Shot Line. And the Shot Line is basically the result of more than 6 years being ignored. My voice has been out there, Patricia's voice, and thousands, millions of voices have been knocking doors and trying to convince, begging these politicians to pass laws and to prioritize life over guns. And that did not work or hasn't worked enough. But we're bringing the voices of the ones that we lost, of our loved ones. And with the technology that we have today, we can do that. So now we have an army of dead people, people that was killed and murdered by the blessing of our system on the gun manufacturers, asking for change. So far, believe it or not, we have close to 40,000 calls made, and we just started a couple of days ago. So, when you tell me, call your representative. If you want to see change, call your representative. That is exactly what we're doing. But I don't want to call it. I want Joaquin to call my representative. Let's see if that way we can find some change.
So you called it Shot Line because?
Well, for obvious reasons. This is people that has been shot. In the Joaquin's case, he got shot 4 times with an AR-15 inside his school. Which is the other thing, like if you find this uncomfortable, which is something that we heard already, well, I think that you don't know what uncomfortable is. I can tell you about feeling uncomfortable when they let you know that your son, your loved one, was shot and you won't be able to see him anymore. You won't be able to watch the Super Bowl with him, for example, anymore, forever. That's being uncomfortable. So this is something that involves all of us. I think we should all support these. And amazingly, and this was kind of predictable, we have already more than 40 submissions from families that want their loved one's voice to be part of this.
Finally, Manny, you're in Lansing to perform a one-person show called Guac. As we wrap up, tell us about this, and from Lansing to New York.
This is an amazing project, part of a very bad situation and terrible, painful traveling around the country. But we're here. We have the one-man show, and it's a story about Joaquin. You have to remember that Joaquin was here for 17 wonderful years. So I don't want people to remember. That will be unfair to remember Joaquin as the kid that died on February 14th. This is not honoring Joaquin at all. So this is a roller coaster of emotions. People laugh, people cry, and people engage with what we're doing. Today, we're part of an event. It's a Latinx Film Festival here. And the show will be on Saturday, the 17th. I'm so happy It's probably my favorite project because I can talk about my son, no interruptions, theater treatment, you know? Turn your phones off and just listen how beautiful and amazing my son still is.
Manuel Oliver, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Co-founder of the gun reform group Change the Ref and the new project, The Shot Line. He's father of Joaquin Guac, one of 17 people killed 6 years ago in 2018 in Parkland, Florida. This is Democracy Now. When we come back, we go to London. Yes, this is democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange is set to find out next week whether he's exhausted all potential challenges through the British courts to being extradited to the United States. The two-day hearing before the British High Court of Justice is scheduled to take place in London on Tuesday and Wednesday. Assange is seeking to appeal the June 2022 decision by then-British Home Secretary Priti Patel to approve a request by Washington for him to be extradited to the U.S., where he faces up to 175 years in prison for publishing classified documents exposing U.S. war crimes in Iraq and Afghanistan. Assange has been held in London's infamous Belmarsh prison since 2019, awaiting his possible extradition. Prior to that, he spent 7 years cramped inside Ecuador's embassy in London. Ecuador had granted him political asylum. On Wednesday, Australia's parliament overwhelmingly approved a motion calling for the release of Assange, an Australian citizen. Australian MP Andrew Wilkie introduced the resolution.
This will be the time for all of us to take a stand, to stand up and to take a stand, and to stand with Julian Assange, stand for the principles of justice. Friends, stand for the principles of media freedom and the rights of journalists to do their job. This has gone on too long, that it must be brought to an end. And I'm confident if this Parliament can support this motion this afternoon, Deputy Speaker, it will send a very powerful political signal to the British government and to the US government.
For more, we go to London, where we're joined by Jennifer Robinson, human rights attorney who's been advising Julian Assange on WikiLeaks since 2010. She's just gotten to London. She will be there in court next week. Jennifer Robinson, you are Australian. Can you talk about the significance of what led to, well, the culmination, this resolution passed from the right to the left in the Australian Parliament?
This is an unprecedented demonstration of political support for our campaign to bring Julian Assange home to Australia. As a fellow Australian citizen, I've never seen anything like this in the Australian Parliament. The Australian Parliament, and indeed supported by the Prime Minister and the government, calling on the US and the UK for Julian to be able to return home safely to Australia, is a very strong signal to the United States that it is a priority for the Australian government, for the Australian people and our Parliament, that Julian Assange be freed. This is the culmination of over a decade of campaigning in Australia. I have travelled down to Australia and to Canberra to meet with members of Parliament over many years. Campaign groups, community groups have been putting pressure on their local MPs and on the Parliament to do this. And I think it's a demonstration of the power of community organising and the important principle that this case raises for the Australian people and for the Australian government.
So can you talk about how Julian Assange is seen in Australia? I mean, Australia is a close U.S. ally. What kind of conversations has the Prime Minister Albanese had with President Biden, who's called, at least in the past, called Julian Assange a high-tech terrorist?
The strong sentiment in Australia that this is an Australian citizen, he's an award-winning journalist and publisher, he's won journalism awards around the world, he won the Sydney Peace Prize for the publications for which the US wants to prosecute him. So there's a huge amount of public support for Julian at home, which is reflected in this parliamentary resolution. The Australian Prime Minister took this position as leader of the opposition, the leader of the Labor Party, saying enough is enough, this case has gone on too long, it's time to bring it to an end. And that is a position he has maintained as our Prime Minister, and we are grateful to him for the principled leadership he's showing on this issue, which is the first time an Australian Prime Minister has taken such a strong stand. This goes to show the importance of the issue for Australia, and the Prime Minister has confirmed publicly that he has raised this issue on numerous occasions with President Biden, and we are working with the Australian government and continue to work with the Australian government to try to seek a resolution in the case. It's time that the United States respects our special relationship and listens to the calls of the Australian people and our parliament and our government and drops this case. It's dangerous for US press freedom. It's dangerous for all journalists in the United States. And this is now an issue of a matter of the relationship with Australia.
So what indications do you have that the Biden administration will respond or possibly drop the extradition request? And what indications do you have what the court is going to rule next week, the High Court in Britain?
We certainly hope that the Biden administration will listen to the Australian government and our repeated calls for this case to be dropped. We want to see this matter dropped. We want to see Julian be able to go home safely to Australia. But next week, we're in the sharp end of the case. We are looking down the barrel of our final, potentially Julian's final appeal in the UK. If we are refused permission to appeal on all grounds next week, Julian's extradition will be ordered. The only avenue of appeal left available to us, that will be the end of his appeals in the UK, we cannot appeal to the Court of Appeal, the Supreme Court, will be the European Court of Human Rights. And we are prepared to make a provisional measures application, which we hope will prevent his extradition. But if we're unsuccessful, he'll be on a plane to the United States and in prison in the United States. And that's how serious this matter is. That's how close we are to the very end of this case.
What message do you think is being sent? It's not just about Julian Assange found guilty in the United States and not clear what kind of trial he would have here in the United States, but that he faces 175 years in prison. What message is this to the New York Times, to El País, to Der Spiegel, to The Guardian, to newspapers all over the world who published the WikiLeaks findings?
As we've been saying for years, this case sets a dangerous precedent for all journalists. It is, of course, what we call the New York Times problem, that Julian Assange was engaged in journalistic activity, the same kind of activity that journalists engage in every day, indeed the same activity that all those newspapers engaged in publishing this material. This precedent, if Julian is prosecuted, will be setting a precedent that any journalist anywhere in the world, not just in the United States, but anywhere in the world, could be prosecuted and extradited to the United States to face prosecution for publishing truthful U.S. information. This is the first time in history the U.S. is pursuing a publisher under the Espionage Act. It crosses all legal thresholds in terms of the First Amendment and will set a dangerous precedent, not just for Julian and WikiLeaks, but for the entire media. That's why this is so concerning. And these arguments will feature in our appeal this week. We'll also be making the point that if extradited to the United States, this is a grave threat to free speech. We raise concerns about whether Julian has the ability to be able to get a fair trial in the United States, given where the trial will take place, and the very public statements that have been made by the President of the United States, by the CIA director and other high-profile individuals affecting his right to be presumed innocent. So there's a number of serious concerns, including spying on us as lawyers, unlawful spying on Julian, the seizure of his legally privileged material. This case is rife with abuse. So leaving aside the very principled free speech concerns that have been raised by the New York Times and the Washington Post, that this is criminalizing public interest journalism, there's also incredible due process concerns with this case, and I think should be a cause for concern for anyone who cares about civil liberties.
And on a very different issue, but the top story today, you are a global human rights attorney. Your response, though we can't confirm it independently, Russian state media reporting that the imprisoned opposition leader Alexei Navalny has died in an Arctic Circle Russian prison at the age of 47.
This news is utterly devastating, not just for Navalny's family, but for the Russian people. He's been an incredibly brave and courageous advocate for democracy, not just as opposition leader, but of course, let's not forget his investigative journalism, which revealed and exposed the corruption of Russia's ruling elite. It's a very sad day for his family and a very sad day for democracy in Russia.
Jennifer Robinson, human rights attorney, has been advising Julian Assange and WikiLeaks since 2010, speaking to us from London, where she'll attend the court hearing next week, and Democracy Now! Will be covering that extensively. When we come back, we look at the case of Hinder Shaab, 6-year-old Palestinian girl in Gaza, called for help after her family was shot and killed by Israeli forces. 2 weeks later, their bodies were found alongside the two rescue workers from Palestine Red Crescent who tried to save her. We'll speak with Palestine Red Crescent back in 20 seconds.
(Speaking in Hebrew) خبيني عندك خبيني دخلك يا نونو خبيني عندك خبيني دخلك يا نونو قلت له انت من وين قال لي من حدود السماء قلت له جاي من وين قال لي من بيت الجيران قلت له خايف من مين قال لي من
Sparrow by Marcel Khalifa and Umaima Khalil. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We turn to Gaza, to a case that's reverberated around the world. 2 weeks ago, January 29th, six-year-old Hind Rajab climbed into a car with her aunt, her uncle, and her cousins in Gaza City as they prepared to flee to the southern part of Gaza. But as they were in the car, an Israeli tank approached them and opened fire. Hind's 15-year-old cousin, Leon, called the Red Crescent for help. These were her last words recorded on the call with a Red Crescent dispatcher.
Hello?
Hello, dear.
They are shooting at us.
Hello?
They are shooting at us. The tank is next to me.
Are you hiding?
Yes, in the car. We're next to the tank.
Are you inside the car? Hello.
That was 15-year-old Leanne's last words, killed along with the rest of her family. The only one who remained alive was six-year-old Hind. Wounded, she called the Red Crescent back, pleading with the dispatcher to be rescued.
Come take me. You will come and take me?
Do you want me to come and take you?
I'm so scared. Please come. Please call someone to come and take me.
Okay, dear. I will come and take you.
After seeking approval from the Israeli military, two emergency workers with the Palestine Red Crescent, Yusuf Seino and Ahmed Amadoun, went to try to rescue six-year-old Hind. But dispatchers lost contact with the medics. Nearly 2 weeks later, Israeli forces finally withdrew from the area, and on Saturday, Hind's surviving family ventured back to the neighborhood. They found Hind dead inside the car, alongside the bodies of five of her family members. The car was riddled with bullet holes. The bodies of the two emergency workers were also found in an ambulance nearby, appeared to have been killed by Israeli fire just yards away from the car. This is Hind's mother, Wissam Hamada, after she learned of her daughter's killing.
My heart is completely destroyed over my daughter. 2 weeks, they killed them. 2 weeks, they were in that car. I've told the world from day one, please go get Hind. God is the only one sufficient for us. Everyone failed us. I will tell God on the day of judgment about my daughter. I swear I will never forgive you or any human involved or any human rights organization.
For more on this case, we're joined now by Nabal Farsakh, spokesperson for the Palestine Red Crescent Society, joining us from Ramallah in the occupied West Bank. Nabal, thank you so much for joining us. Tell us everything you know about this case.
Good evening. Thanks for having me. We at the Palestine Red Crescent were heartbroken and devastated again after learning the fate of our colleagues, Yusuf Zeino and Ahmed Al-Madhoun. The ambulance was found bombed just meters away from the car where Hind was trapped. The story began after we have received a call from the uncles of Hind and Layan, who live overseas, reporting that there's two little girls are still survived after their family car was targeted by the Israeli tanks. He gave us a phone number. We called, and then Layan picked up the phone, and this is the call which you just previewed. Layan was killed while she was over the phone with our dispatch center, and then we have called the number again, and hence, which picked up the phone. Hind was supposed to turn into 6 years in May, and now she has lost her life. Over 3 hours, Hind was over the phone with our dispatch center. She was repeatedly seeking help, repeatedly appealing for our teams to come and pick her up. It took us all of this time, over 3 hours, in order to coordinate safe access for our ambulances. And once the green light was given, the ambulance headed to the location. And upon its arrival, they have reported that there is a green laser on them, that the Israeli occupation forces pointing a laser on them. And then we have heard a sound of gunfire or a bombardment. It wasn't that much clear, and the connection was lost. For over 12 days, we were uncertain regarding the fate of our colleagues, Youssef and Ahmed, and the little girl, Hand. We were thinking that they might be arrested. There was so many questions, like if they were succeeded to rescue Hand or not, because basically, also, they have confirmed that they can see the car of Hand, and they were so close to Hand. It is just devastated to learn that Hand passed away alone. She was killed alone and scared, and our rescue teams were only meters away from her.
And can you explain the weapon found by the ambulance?
We're not sure regarding the weapon found next to the ambulance. According to reports, it is an artillery shelling, U.S.-made, was found next to the ambulance, which was bombed by the Israeli occupation forces while they were trying to save 6-year-old Hand. It's just so much sad to see paramedics losing their life while they are trying to save people's life. What was the fault of Youssef and Ahmed? Their fault was they went in a rescue mission to save a 6-year-old girl. It was a coordinated mission, and the green light was given, and Israeli occupation forces intentionally bombed the Palestine Red Crescent ambulance, which has clearly the Red Crescent emblem on top of the ambulance and from all the sides. There was no way or no option to be by mistake. It is an intentional targeting. Since the beginning of the war, we have lost 14 PRCS members. All of them were killed while they were on duty trying to save people's life.
And what does the Israeli military explain to you, given that you got permission for your rescue workers to go rescue Hind as the world heard her 6-year-old pleas for help?
Up to this moment, the Israeli military didn't comment or reply at what happened. And even during the 12 days, we have tried repeatedly, even through the ICRC, to ask the Israeli occupation forces regarding what happened to Hand and the rescue team. And all the time, they were mentioning they don't have info regarding this incident. To turn out, after 12 days, they have bombed the ambulance, and still they don't have info regarding the incident.
I want to turn to another case. The Palestine Red Crescent has just posted new video online as evidence that their ambulance was shot at and its staff were, quote, brutally assaulted by Israeli forces. PRCS said the video was taken around a week ago and shows a Red Crescent paramedic with two black eyes sitting in an ambulance that is pockmarked by bullet holes. The organization says the attack happened as the ambulance crew was delivering oxygen cylinders to Al-Amal Hospital in Gaza. It also stated that Israel had claimed they had transferred the oxygen cylinders to Al-Amal Hospital. Can you explain what took place here in this video that we are watching?
Yes, for over a week, Al-Amal Hospital was run out of oxygen. This has resulted to three of our patients died because of the lack of oxygen. After we managed to coordinate getting oxygen cylinders to the hospital via the ICRC, our ambulance heads to bring the oxygen cylinders from Nasser Hospital and to transport them to Al Amal Hospital. In its way, the ambulance, Israeli occupation forces, opened fire at the hospital, and they insult and beat our paramedic who was trying to move and transport this oxygen cylinder, which is life-saving for our patients. This is not the first attack, because at that moment, also a week ago, the Israeli occupation forces raided Al Amal Hospital. They have destroyed medical equipment, and they dehumanized the medical staff, patients, and their companions. They arrested 9 of the Palestine Red Crescent members from Al Amal Hospital, including 4 doctors and a nurse. They have beaten the staff, deny them, not allowing them to drink water or even to go use the toilet, and tie their hands on their backs. The situation is extremely dangerous inside Al Amal Hospital. We are still extremely worried regarding the safety of our teams who were arrested from Al Amal Hospital today. 2 of them were arrested, were released, but 7 of our PRCS members still detained up to this moment, who were arrested from inside Al Amal Hospital. Al Amal Hospital is under siege and continuous attack for the 25th day. Today, Israeli occupation forces targeted the second floor of the hospital with artillery shelling. Gladly, only damage for 2 of the nursing rooms, but there was no injuries among the staff or the patients. But the situation remains very dangerous, with Israeli tanks are in front of the hospital, besieging the hospital, continuous gunfire and bombardment surrounding the hospital. No one is able to go in or go out of the hospital. There is no food, no water, extreme shortage of medicine and medical supplies inside the hospital. The situation is beyond dire.
Nabal, I asked you about Israeli response. I want to ask you about the U.S. government response and how important it is. This is a clip of State Department spokesperson Matt Miller at a news conference on Wednesday. He was questioned about the killing of 6-year-old Hind and her family by a reporter from The Intercept, Prem Thacker.
It's been over 2 weeks since Israeli forces attacked Hind Rajab's family, killing her aunt, uncle, and cousins, leaving her trapped alone in her vehicle. We heard her pleas to the Red Crescent Society. 2 medics were sent, all to be blown up, allegedly, by Israeli forces. I wanted to ask about the status of the inquiry into this, just because it seems if the Israeli government, you know, which seemingly does have a pretty sophisticated operation, is prioritizing this, and they don't already know which soldiers to interview, for instance, they have Red Crescent calls, timestamps, the location of the Red Crescent staff to, you know, question and rely on. Plenty of material to figure out who exactly to inquire with and to figure out who to hold accountable. So I want to first ask about the status of this.
Sure. So I think that question is appropriately directed to the government of Israel. I will say on behalf of the United States, we have made clear to them that we want that incident to be investigated. They have told us they are investigating it. It's our understanding that investigation is not yet complete. Should direct questions to them about where it stands. But we want to see it completed as soon as possible. And as I said from this podium several days ago, if accountability is appropriate, we want to see accountability put in place.
Nabal Farsak, we just have 30 seconds. That's the State Department spokesperson. How important is pressure from the United States and Israel? As you talked about a U.S. weapon being found near the shelled ambulance.
It is extremely important. The life and the story of Hind should not be end in this way. We're talking about 6-year-old girl. She was trapped in her family car for hours after everyone was killed and targeted by Israeli occupation forces. During this, even 2 paramedics who went to rescue the 6-year-old girl was also targeted, and their ambulance was bombed. We need to see actions happened and to put Israel accountable for committing such crime against a 6-year-old girl and civilians who were trapped in their car.
We thank you so much for joining us, spokesperson for Palestine Red Crescent.
Indulge yourself in the cultural and folklore traditions of Italy on Il Sole Italiano, every Sunday from 2 to 4 p.m.
fanciulli ogni sera su quel prato.
Starting from the week of Monday, May 30th, the Student Union Building is open 7 days a week from 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. The sub-building common spaces, along with the bookable spaces, are available for use. Any comments or questions, please go to the Simon Fraser Student Society website at sfss.ca for more information.